JM in the AM Monday, Ruvane Fenton is with us live via telephone. He has been covering breaking news for the New York Post since 2007 and has earned national recognition for his exclusive reporting on a myriad of national stories. He's got a novel out, by the way, and I explained to him weeks ago that fiction is not my cup of tea normally. And in general, there are novels that grab people's attention and others that do not. The reason this one grabbed our attention, it's called Goyhood, by the way, G-O-Y-H-O-O-D. The reason it grabbed our attention is because the premise, if we have it right, is a premise that I think almost every from birth person has thought about at some point during their life. And we'll have a chance to speak to Ruvane about that premise as well, not just the breaking news. Ruvane Fenton, a pleasure to welcome you to JM in the AM.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you, Nahum. Great to be here.
So we're living in a crazy world, and it always seems that I know that you're not a spokesman for the New York Post, but one has to recognize that when it comes to stories about normal life, about appropriate Zionist activities, attitudes, and views, it seems that the New York Post is always out there at the forefront compared to other media outlets. Would that be a fair evaluation?
You know, it's not only fair, but I think at this point, I got to applaud the Post. I think their coverage has been heroic. No, I shouldn't say their. I should say our coverage. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think it's just been heroic because at this point, to speak on behalf of Israel right now, it takes guts. Even if you are recognized as a conservative outlet, it takes guts because to even use the word Zionist and not associated with racism is something that people do carefully nowadays. I mean, unfortunately, and just the fact, I mean, just relentlessly positive coverage towards Israel as Israel so rightly deserves. For the Post to do that, I mean, it's really been an honor. The place has changed for me this past year. I always liked it, but this year it really cemented in my head as just a great news company.
And by the way, we're New York Post readers for God knows how many decades at this point, but only recently, I think, since the war started, did we become very, very familiar with Goodwin and Murray and Divine and so many regular contributors to the newspaper who just are able to take on the craziness of this world in a very sensible and logical manner. I know these people, many of them, have been with you guys a long time, but do you feel that your columnists are getting a lot more attention than they used to?
Totally. It's really interesting. You know, the columnists and the Post in general. I get this all the time. Like people say, do you know Miranda Devine? She's amazing. I hear this, constantly. I didn't used to get this a lot from. Not to say our columnists weren't good prior to October 7th, but the amount of people who like the Post really became, I think, so many people, particularly Jewish people's go-to news source, and just to hear at least one news company, their columnists speaking and saying what speaking to the people who read it and speaking to what we feel. I'm saying we as a Jew, we right. feel is a remarkable thing, and it's become so rare that you treasure these moments.
Remember, there's plenty of Jews, especially Jews in the media, who don't feel the same way that your editorial board feels.
I know,
and it can be very distressing. I mean, when you're reading some of your crosstown colleagues, you have to roll your eyes sometimes.
You have to roll your eyes, and honestly, just for morale, I kind of limit my exposure. I kind of get the picture at this point of where they're going, and I don't feel like suffering through my day.
Yeah, you're doing what we're always suggested to do, which is shut off the media, or in your case, shut off the media that drives you crazy. If only I was capable of doing that.
Yeah, I know, right? But your obligations to stay informed.
Forget the obligations. I'm a junkie for this stuff, and it's a great spectator sport. And mm-hmm. and frankly, it is distressing, and you can't believe half the stuff or more of what you're reading. But the reality is that this is where the mainstream media in this country is at the moment, and I would say, frankly, around the globe as well, including Israel, by the way, which is a whole separate.
Well, yeah, I mean, media in general is infiltrated by activists. I mean, you know, like journalism became a major platform for activism, and everybody, you know, anybody who works at like the New York Times knows this. I mean, this is a well-documented thing that basically it's a lot of young activists who became journalists.
Right.
So they could get their activism out there.
I forgot who wrote the book about CBS years ago, but that was one of the great exposés about what goes on at these networks and news organizations. Reuven Fenton is with us live via telephone. You can read him in the New York Post. And you sent us one of the articles that where you had followed what was happening in cancel culture regarding Jewish authors, which begs the question, Reuven Fenton, if I just highlighted the fact that you're out with a brand new novel, are you the subject of any cancel culture out there?
Well, you know, so far, so good. You know, maybe as a debut novel, I'm just not popular enough, but I check my ratings every day on Goodreads and on Amazon, because I'm just waiting for the day that I'm going to get that first one-star review by somebody whose explanation for my one-star review is just Zionist author.
Right.
I'm waiting for that moment. And it hasn't happened yet, but I feel like it's only a matter of time. Maybe I'll get lucky, and it'll never happen. I don't know.
And if cancel culture in a number of arenas really accelerated over the last couple of years, and obviously this is October 7th, I can only imagine the evidence you have about what has happened among Jewish authors and Jewish people in general, public figures in general. I'm sure since October 7th, it's only increased. Is there rhyme or reason to whom they target? I mean, you know, you joke about, you know, whether in fact you're going to end up being a victim of this or not. But is there any category of people in particular among Jewish authors or Jewish leaders, you know, that get this type of treatment while others are ignored?
Mm-hmm. I think it has a lot to do with how active you are on social media. So if you're an author who happened to on October 7th or October 8th have posted, let's say, an Instagram post praising Magen David Adom for doing a phenomenal and heroic job, saving lives in the wake of the massacre. If you posted that and you're a reasonably well-known author, these organizers who are out there scouring social media posts looking for such things find you,
right,
you're going on the list.
Right.
And I got to say, this list, the list I'm referring to, it was this spreadsheet that went viral.
Right.
This was the craziest thing I ever saw, you know, very briefly. It was a spreadsheet that was color-coded. It had sourcing. It had links. It basically linked. It was this list of authors and color coding based on the degree of their offensiveness. You know, a red was really bad. You know, a yellow was, you know, moderately bad. Zionist. You know, depending on what you had posted. But I mean, you would get a red if you had one time praise Magen David Adom. And by the way, it wasn't even all Jewish authors. It was just like any author who had been mostly Jewish, but. You know, I mean, it was chilling.
So the badge of honor is the red, right? Between red, yellow, and green.
I believe the red was.
Red, yellow, and green. You want the red?
Yeah, exactly.
Reuven Fenton is with us. You know, there's and again, I don't know how comfortable you are speaking about the particulars, especially as now the news of this weekend has become so urgent regarding what's happening up north in Israel, this terrible tragedy, etc. Some are saying that, you know, with the attitude of there's a new sheriff in town, Biden riding off into the sunset, Trump now on the losing end of all these polls in the battleground states against Vice President Harris, with the perception that the world has that she's now in charge or eventually will be, maybe that will lead Hezbollah and other terrorist organizations to become a bit more aggressive, very similar to what we saw this past Shabbos. What do you think of that? Do you think that there's an attitude, or do you know if your columnists might be addressing this, that with her now at the helm, so to speak, or the perceived helm, there could be a very different international attitude?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the Post, I don't remember who wrote the column, but there was a column just yesterday that was to the effect that, you know, Harris's comments just the other day after she met Netanyahu, like that alone emboldened, like it was drawing a parallel between the Hezbollah attack and like literally that just the news alone that Harris was running for president, could well not have happened had that not happened, and it's already people are dead. I mean, it's a going theory, like, you know, who could say, you know, look, theories are theories, okay. Yeah. But I mean, you know, there is it's a valid theory, and that alone is a cause for concern. Just the fact that you can draw the, make these kinds of connections in the first place is concern enough.
Oh, believe you me, we're concerned. You know, I need to ask someone like yourself who, you know, sits at these news desks and, you know, and watches what's going on. And, you know, the former president, was almost assassinated. And that night, that Saturday night, I don't know how many people said to me, oh, look, he now won the election. Okay, you know, that was, I thought, a legitimate observation in the aftermath of the terrible shock of him being shot. But then I commented to so many of them. I said, you know, the election's very far away. And sure enough, a week later, this enthusiasm that we thought, or whatever word you want to use, the trend of, Trump's going to automatically win, obviously dissipated. And who knows what could happen over the next 100 days. What's it like when you're sitting in a position like yours and observing all of this and really trying to keep up with the fact that every time 24 hours go by, it could be a completely different news story?
Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, the appetite for election news rivals, I would say, sports, I would say surpasses sports, just the appetite. So the appetite for news is so high on politics, particularly presidential elections, that there's this need to consume and consume and consume. So that, you know, that's what the columnists come in, with right. Speculation. So it gets to the point that it's like, well, I mean, there's really so little to work with, and there's so many unknowns. I mean, I remember, and people were convinced that Trump was going to win a second term. Right. And, you know, by a landslide, people spoke with such confidence. So, I mean, if you're like me, you really do take it all with a grain of salt. That's just my modus operandi.
And you try to toe like the, you know, you try to maintain a balance. You know, you can't find yourself fooling yourself into thinking, oh, this is automatically going to happen, or the other thing's automatically going to happen.
I think that's a foolish endeavor. I really do. I mean, there have been instances in the past, like when George Bush beat Michael Dukakis. I mean, okay, like there have been true landslides before, but the elections have been so close. I mean, I can't, you know, there's too many variables, and there's too much anger, and there's too much passion for these candidates on both sides, and. I mean, it would not surprise me if either one of them won.
And many pundits have suggested we'll never have a landslide again. And I think that's also a legitimate point of view. Like, it's very possible.
It's hard to envision. Yeah. I mean, maybe if we're talking long term, like let's say 50 years, 100 years from now, when it's a different world, we'll see. But right now, it's just hard to envision because it's just so 50-50 right now.
By the way, on the subject of sports, and look, there's nothing like your outfit, the New York Post, nobody covers sports the way they do. And of course, a lot of people try. And no, hey, I'm a big sports fan, as I've mentioned to you. And many people out there give sports radio credit when a movement begins and, you know, something ends up happening because of that movement. For instance, I'll give you a perfect example. You have to tell your sports editorial board that the New York Yankees need a new manager. But I think that the Post is the only only non, you know, I mean, I know they have a social media presence, but they're the only outlet not known for its social media primarily, and not and that's not sports radio, that still can have an influence on what happens with local teams and the moves they need to make. Because your columnists, they really could swing the pendulum. They really can run a guy out of town, so to speak. So the only message I have for you is please let them know that we need we need some changes in the Bronx.
Listen. A week from now, you may be looking at a new manager, and it's all started with this one conversation.
Then again, a week from now, there could be a 7-game winning streak, and we'll have the complete complacency with the manager. So who knows?
Scratch that request.
I gotta ask you, Ruben Fenton. And again, I said to you that it's hard for me to read a novel, and you understood that, although you did send it to me, which I greatly appreciate. It was fascinating flipping through it. The book is called Goyhood, and the reason I am so enthralled with the book is because I'm so enthralled with the premise. How many people in the Orthodox community growing up, I was just discussing this the other day with some of my relatives, how many people have had this hypothetical, daydream, if they wake up one day and find out they're not Jewish, how on earth would they approach it? And sure enough, the character in your book is somebody who discovers, after having lived a completely frum life, they find out that after their mother passes, that their mother was not Jewish, right? That's the premise.
That's what happens, yes, in the first few chapters.
And I have to assume that that you did the same thing growing up, that you were always dreaming of this hypothetical, and I never dreamt there would be a great premise for a novel, but in fact it is.
Well, yeah, because it's like we all take it for granted that we're Jews, and the reason we know that we're Jews is because we simply trace our lineage. I mean, like no one said we weren't going all the way back to Mount Sinai,
right?
But then there are many among us who were in this situation where, like my protagonist, where, as a child they were not in a religious family, in one way or another. And then the mother would do a little research, let's say, and find out, my maternal grandmother was a Jew, so therefore that makes me a Jew, and that makes you a Jew. And so there's a lot of stories like this where people who didn't realize, where the opposite is true. Somebody who didn't know they were Jews find out that they are, and which is what happens to my character as a child. He actually doesn't know he's a Jew, and then he finds out he's a Jew, and then he grows up and enters the kind of the yeshiva kollel world in Brooklyn, and that's when he discovers what is true, the truth that he wasn't a Jew to begin with. But this is only after he's deeply embedded in the yeshiva life, like has gone through all of the whole shas and all this, knows everything, and so it's a total identity crisis that results in what happens after the discovery.
And the cool part about this progression is that it could go in a million directions. I mean, once he makes his discovery, again, like we've all thought of over the years, it could go 100 different ways.
Yeah. And this particular way involves a road trip through the deep South with his estranged twin brother, who's the exact opposite of him, who's a sort of a hedonistic, materialistic, not non-religious type of person, a sort of Yaakov and Esav pairing, if you will. And they go on this road trip and get into all kinds of madcap adventures, and a transformation takes place for both of them. As they kind of reunite with one another and come to all these understandings. But meanwhile, Mayer, who is the protagonist, the yeshiva guy, he's going through this fish out of water situation, in the South, and, actually seeing America for the first time and seeing what's out there and just being horrified, but also fascinated. And it's a whole saga that he goes through.
All right. The novel is called Goyhood. It's Ruven Fenton, F-E-N-T-O-N. I'm assuming it's available everywhere, right?
Everywhere. Your favorite bookstore, Amazon, what have you. And its audiobook is just coming out tomorrow. Soft cover will come out next year. But right now it's the hardcover, the audiobook, and ebook, of course, if that's your preference. And you can get it anywhere.
Ruven, I got to ask you, before I let you go, last week we were talking about Harvard, and someone had commented to me that what's going on at Harvard has always been going on, just now it's on steroids. Now it's the encampment, now it's the center of attention on the campus, now it's congressional hearings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You went to the Columbia School of Journalism. The impression that we have always had over the last couple of decades is that it is a hub for generally anti-Semitic attitudes. Is that correct? And is it any different today than it was?
I think it's just okay. So the in brief, I don't know, but the longer answer is this: that I'm sure that it's always been underneath. I'm sure that these things were simmering, and that people were waiting for the opportunity to come out of the woodwork and really get active and really get out there. And then October 7th was just the time that it exploded for everyone. But I'm happy you brought up Columbia, because you know I went there because you must see it on my book cover, right. And right. And I mentioned also Yeshiva University, which right. is where I went to college.
Right.
I said, you know, that was all before this Columbia stuff happened, the right. encampments and all this horrifying stuff that went on that I had to cover, by the way, and got very depressed about. But all that being said, if I could do it all over again with a book cover, I would take off the Columbia altogether and just leave Yeshiva University, because, and this all has to do with a phenomenon that's been happening to all of us Jews, where all of a sudden we feel this incredibly strong Jewish identity. I would just like scrap the whole Columbia thing. Like, I don't even want people to know that.
Wow.
And just like Yeshiva University all the way. And it used to be the reverse, by the way. I used to be a little bit sheepish about my Jewish college, whereas my Ivy League pedigree gave my ego a good boost. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas that is totally reversed after October 7th.
Wow. How interesting. And would you say, and again, just going back 20, 30 years, would you say that those who attended the Columbia School of Journalism did in fact have a certain direction that they were taught that was, to which they were directed by their professors in that school, or not necessarily?
I'll tell you. So I went there I was in 2006, 2008. I was there. I don't recall like Israel ever coming. I mean, people were very respected. Everything's changed. I mean, even since the time I've been there, 18 years or so, 14 years, whatever it is, things have just changed so much in terms of people expressing their politics out loud and needing you to know how they feel politically. This outspokenness is just so out of control now. And that wasn't going on even when I was there. I mean, right. I do remember while I was there real quick was my first exposure to, because again, I went to, Jewish college.
Right.
My first exposure to that type of activism, there was a conservative speaker who was invited by somebody to speak at Columbia, and then the sort of radicals stormed the stage and shouted him out of there. And I had never seen that before. I was horrified. I did not know that this existed. This type of behavior. I could not believe that anybody would ever shout down a speaker. It just seems so against just basic courtesy, right. Human, it's like the laws of politeness, if you will. And that was my first exposure, but that was like a few and far between at the time. Now it's just commonplace. Like, it's a given. You shout down Jerry Seinfeld when he goes to speak at the 92nd Street Y, just do one of his comedy performances. Right. Every time he does a comedy performance, there's going to be hecklers shouting about him down about being a Zionist.
It's a different world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's terrible. It's a completely different world. The frustration is that we're dealing with now is extremely high, extremely intense. And as a reporter, it's a very difficult thing to cover. I've had to go to way too many. I mean, thank God it's the summer and college is out. because, you know, I'm not having to go to so many of these rallies. I mean, because when I have to cover them as news, it's unbearable.
But from what we hear, and I thought differently, but from what we heard last week, it looks like when the semester begins again, there's going to be the same enthusiasm for these encampments and protests.
I'm sure there will. I'm dreading it up. But, you know, but what's the summer all about? It's all about it's vacation. It's vacation for all of us, hopefully, on some level, where, you know, we can all take a little rest before going back to war again.
Right. And it's funny you call it war, but it's exactly what it is. Ruvane Fenton covers breaking news for the New York Post for the last 15 years. He has earned national recognition for his exclusive reporting on a myriad of national stories, and Goyhood, G-O-Y-H-O-O-D, with what I think is an amazing premise and one that really hits home, is available now. It is a novel that Ruvane Fenton wrote. Ruvane, we wish you the best of luck with the book and the best of luck continuing at the Post with how you cover the news. And a lot of people out there in this audience really appreciate your work.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been great.
A pleasure. Ruvane Fenton on JM in the AM. This is America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio, around the world, the web, at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and, of course, on the beloved NSN app.